Welcome to another episode of Great Lakes Football Talk presented by the Fantasy Football Fraternity. Once again, I am your host, Jerry, alongside my co-host, Adam, and we have another great show for you guys today. First, let's get into some news and notes. The first game of the season is going to kick off with the Bears and Packers on Thursday night, September 5th, and it's the first game since 2003 that doesn't include the defending Super Bowl champion. As we know, the New England Patriots beat the Rams this past February 13-3 in the Super Bowl to capture Tom Brady's sixth ring. And they're going to kick it off instead with the Packers and the Bears as part of the 100th season. Anything you want to say about that, Adam?
I mean, I think it's good that they're mixing up a little bit, not bringing the Super Bowl team, even though a lot of people do look forward to that. But they picked a good matchup. The Packers and Bears, they always seem to play each other tough. It's normally a competitive game, other than a few games here and there. And, I think this game actually is one of the games a lot of people want to see, because we want to see what, you know, Aaron Rodgers looks like with, you know, new weapons around him, how they're going to start their season due to the horrendous season they had this past season. And we want to see the rise of the Bears. I mean, me being a Lions fan, I don't want to see them rise, but fans want to see them actually see if they can take another step, and hopefully they don't have too many doinkers off the bar.
Yeah, very disappointing loss for them in the playoffs to the Eagles, with Cody Parkey hitting the double doink in the final seconds. Yeah, I'm excited about this game. It's weird to not see the Patriots or the defending Super Bowl champs playing on that Thursday night. Supposedly they're going to be on the Sunday night broadcast, and it remains to be seen who they're going to play. My guess is probably Kansas City. I think they play in New England this year. So, but having that game early in the year, I'm talking about the Packers and the Bears, it's going to be interesting. We get hopefully a healthy Aaron Rodgers. Khalil Mack is going to have his first full offseason with the Bears, along with all the other weapons that the Bears are putting together. Trubisky kind of showed some stride last year, and hopefully it's a good game and kicks off the 2019 season. Our next news and notes that we got here, Johnny Manziel making his return to football yet again, this time coming south from the Canadian Football League. He's now in the AAF. What do you think about that?
I'm a big fan of Johnny Manziel. I was hoping that he would keep his nose clean and everything and stay in the NFL, and it didn't work out. But I just like to see him play, even though I don't think he's ever going to be an elite quarterback or maybe even a Pro Bowl quarterback if he ends up making his way back into the league. He is exciting to watch. I mean, he reminds me of a Mike Vick type player, but just not as that high of a level. I mean, he'll put butts in seats. He's a big name for the AAF to get. And they actually had a sale for the tickets. I think if you bought a Johnny Manziel jersey, I think they're giving away like a pair of tickets, or vice versa. If you bought a pair of tickets, you got the Manziel jersey. But it's going to be good for them. I mean, for a league that is just starting out, I think one of the biggest things for it not to flame out real quickly or flame out altogether is to have some type of big name or big names in there. And Manziel is definitely one of them.
Yeah, obviously he didn't get the start. I didn't really watch any of the game, but I guess he came in and ripped off a run right away. He had a long pass right away. I don't know what his exact stats were, but you hit the nail on the head. Exactly. He's going to put butts in seats. He's going to sell tickets. I don't think he's going to be in the NFL again. And I think this is probably as high as he goes again. He's still only 26 years old, so you never know. But I think his career is just about done in the NFL. But to continue playing football, as long as the AAF is around, I think he'll be all right there. I really don't have much more to say about him other than that. He's just another quarterback just trying to play football. Finally, for news and notes, you don't have a lot going on, but this is probably the biggest one. Rob Gronkowski announcing his retirement, and we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll get into that a little bit. It's especially for me being in his division for the past 9 years, it's kind of bittersweet. I mean, he grew up actually in my area. He's from a suburb of Buffalo. But so we kind of grew to hate him because he plays for New England, but in the same time, we kind of rooted for him because he's a local guy. I know you guys didn't get to see him that much being in the NFC, but what are your thoughts on him and his legacy?
He was probably a once in a generational, I can probably say, yeah, once in a generational type talent at his position. I mean, he had the injury history, which took, everybody knows that's probably the main factor, which maybe the only factor into actually him cutting his career short, but nobody other than really Patriots fan likes the Patriots because they win too much. But if you're a top player, or even if you're a good player and you're entertaining, I love to watch it. And he was definitely someone that was super fun to watch. I mean, from the touchdown celebrations to some of the trash talk you could hear. I mean, he was a good all-around player, and Patriots are going to have a hard time replacing him.
Yeah, that's for sure. Picking out of the 32 spot, you can probably think that they're, with the news today, that they're probably leaning maybe towards one of the Iowa tight ends or even Irv Smith, but we'll talk about that at another time. Right now, talking about Gronk, and again, being in our division, he whipped our butts. He's had multiple 100-yard games. Just looking at his stats here, he's had 6 100-yard games against us, 1 94-yard game, so almost 7. He's missed only 3. For his injury history, he's only missed 3 games versus us, both games in 2013 and then one in 2014. But for the rest, for his whole time here or in New England, he's dominated us. He's 12 total touchdowns over about 15 games. And that's, we'll even say 14 games because he barely played in the very last game that he played against Buffalo. And which actually brings me to what I could remember is he was held statless in that game. And then also another division rival, if you remember the Miami Miracle, I think they call it, where he was playing safety on that last play of the game. So he kind of went out on the bottom as far as like against two division rivals in this season. But he's, I mean, for him being a rival, he's got nothing but love from me. There was one game that back in 2017, he kind of took a cheap shot at Tre'Davious White along the sideline. Everybody in Buffalo was calling for his head, calling him a cheap shot artist. But that's honestly like his only cheap shot that I could ever think of, even Googling him earlier. That's the only thing that came up when you Google Rob Gronkowski cheap shot. So it's like he wasn't a dirty player. He was just one of the most dominant tight ends to ever play the game. And I'm glad I got to see it for the last 9 years.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, he had like, it really wasn't off the field issues, but you know, he was a party animal, but he really never caused problems for his team. I mean, there, you know, too many players can't say, oh, I like the party, and they don't end up getting suspended or something. I mean, we seen it in Johnny Manziel, we seen it, you know, Josh Gordon, when you go hanging out with the wrong crowd, going out to parties, look what happens. And that's never, from as far as I know, that's never even came close to being a problem with Gronk.
No, not at all. He's like, he did like to party, but he was, he also loved the game of football. He was there. He showed up every Sunday. He was in practice when he needed to practice, and he just dominated on the field. He had, again, just going back to just versus Buffalo, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but just versus Buffalo, he had more dominant games than not dominant games. And playing them twice a year, that's saying something. Now, granted, we weren't the greatest defensive team or greatest team altogether in those years, but just he put on a show. He finished against us. He finished his career against Buffalo, at least, with 69 receptions. Nice. 1,070 yards and 12 touchdowns. And that's basically for a 15 games. I mean, those are wide receiver one numbers for a wide receiver just over the course of a season. And he's putting this as a tight end just over a 15 game career versus one team.
Yeah. And honestly, even though, you know, like you guys said, you guys weren't great defensively. He's tore up numerous people, though. I mean, he's good teams, bad teams. He's basically – he tore up every team he's went against at least once. I mean, I was lucky as a Lions fan that we didn't have to, you know, see him that much. I think maybe twice, three times maybe, and then once in the preseason. And I don't remember, I don't even think he played in that game. But we were lucky. I mean, just, you know, this year I see him against Detroit, and, you know, 5 catches for 51 yards, which doesn't seem like anything, but, I mean – it's even the games where you look and goes, oh, he's only put up 30 yards or something. He's a guy that you have to pay attention to no matter what, because at any time, you know, we've seen it during the Super Bowl, you know, in other playoff games, anytime he's not making the ball, you see, you know, catching the ball, you see guys, you know, defenses, they're double teaming him, especially when you're down towards the red zone, because he is such a threat down there.
Yeah, he was. If he wasn't catching the ball, if he wasn't running out, running routes and making matters into his own hands, he was definitely a decoy. And towards the end of his career, he was a good run blocker. I mean, I don't want to say he's solely the reason why Sonny Michel emerged this year, but he's definitely a huge reason for it. He was getting out there, putting the licking on linebackers and safeties and opening up holes for that run game. And we definitely got to see New England kind of develop a run game this year. That's typically something that we don't see or we haven't seen in years past, but this year they started to kind of go to the run a little bit more. And you can definitely tell on some plays that Gronk was a huge factor in why they got those big gains.
Yeah. And honestly, I think he's one of very, very few players that you can go look up their stats and he goes 1 or 2 catches, 20 yards, and you automatically know, okay, he was one of the main players in this game, even though the stats don't say it, just because of, like, you know, we just said, the whole decoy thing. I mean, you had him, Kelvin, Jerry Rice, a handful of other guys where stats might not show it, but they played a big part in that game because they were getting other guys open due to single coverage, or in Gronk's case, as being a tight end, opening up holes for the run game. I mean, even the times he was, you know, injured and banged up, he was still blocking out there. I mean, there was no doubting his love for the game. He put 100% out there every time.
Yeah, definitely. So this brings me to my next question for you. Where do you rank him all time in terms of tight ends?
Number two, I mean, I don't think him or really anybody's going to touch Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez was just a freak. I slide him in there between Gonzalez and, to me, Jason Witten, Antonio Gates, Kellen Winslow, clump those in. But, yeah, he's definitely number two. I mean, if you look at his stats, I mean, he was, you know, I took his averages and – over his nine-year career, he was averaging 58 catches, 873 yards, and 9 touchdowns. I mean, he's not a wide receiver. He's a tight end. He's averaging 9 touchdowns a season. I mean, there's not many. I was doing that for Witten. Witten was averaging basically 4.5 touchdowns a season. Gonzalez, he was only averaging basically 6.5 touchdowns a game or a season. And then even Antonio Gates, I did his, and Antonio was only averaging 7 touchdowns a season. So, I mean, for Gronkowski to have that big of a presence, you know, and even if he, you know, he missed a lot of games, even the games he played, you know, he was still doing something. And he has to be number two. I mean, if he would have played longer, I feel like he potentially could have been that number one guy. But it's – you can't – with a guy that played 9 years, I don't think you can compare him to Tony Gonzalez, who played 17.
Yeah, no, that's probably the main reason why he's not in a lot of people's number one. But if you were to name, and you did already, but if anybody were to name their top 5 tight ends, just based on productivity and just legacy, he has to be up there. Now, if you want to name your personal 5 tight ends and don't name them, that's totally up to you. But if you leave him out of, the top overall tight ends, statistic wise, legacy wise, then I mean, you just don't know football. He's definitely up there. I would probably put him at number two as well, behind Tony Gonzalez. But I got the same people around you. Your Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez, Jason Witten's even up there, like you said. But there's not, I mean, there's that's that core group. Not getting into anybody before then. Just basically, I'm just going off of the players that I've personally seen play, and he's up there. He's number two to me, I would say.
Yeah, and you know, I was kind of thinking about this today when we were discussing going over the podcast, and I took all of Gronk's averages and multiplied them by 17, which is the number of years Tony Gonzalez played, and Gronk's numbers were 986 catches, 14,841 yards, and 153 touchdowns. You know, if he would have stayed the course, and I mean, and his numbers would have been even better this past 9 years if, you know, he didn't miss all these games. I mean, he's only had one full season, and then he's had one other season with 15 games. And he's still this productive. I mean, he has more seasons where he's played 10 games or less than he has 16. And it's a shame. I mean, because I personally think he might have. He would have really, really, really came close, I think, Tony Gonzalez, where it's the point where people, like, as soon as someone asks me the question, I go, it's Tony Gonzalez, hands down. If he would have played 15 years, I think it would have been, I don't know, I'd have to really think about it. But unfortunately, it's not happening. You know, it sucks because he was a phenomenal player, but the injuries do that to the best of them. I'm just shocked how he was so productive while he had the injuries more than anything else. It just shows you how basically good he is. I mean, there's not much more you can really say about it. Is like, he missed so many games, and like probably at least half the games he played, he was somewhere like banged up or dinged up, you know, it was the foot, the back, the hand, something. And he was still posting good numbers.
Yeah. And he was for his 9 years, he's been a pretty legit fantasy option too. So that brings me to a question for you. Who do you see lining up next to the tackles this year for the New England Patriots?
I mean, unfortunately, Gronk didn't retire a week earlier because I would have said Jared Cook. I wouldn't have been surprised if they threw a bunch of money at Jared Cook, but Cook's now off the market. I think it has to be draft. You mentioned earlier the Iowa tight ends. I think if they were to go that route and was like, we need one of the, like, if they have him viewed where these two Iowa tight ends were by far and away the top two of this group, which I think they are, they would have to do something that the Patriots don't normally do, and that's to actually move up. I mean, you see it every year. They trade out of the first round, they trade back a little bit. If they're picking 25, 26, they trade back to 30-ish. They would actually have to move up. I mean, these two Iowa tight ends, they might be gone by pick, 15, 16. And if they view it as, well, those we need our offense to move through a good tight end, then they're going to have to do that. I mean, I don't see any of these other tight ends. This is a good tight end class. Outside of these two Iowa tight ends, I don't see anybody else that has the good chance of putting up numbers that Gronk did or being the main piece in the offense like Gronk was.
No, not at all. Two last things actually on the tight ends. If those two Iowa tight ends do end up going within the top 15, do you possibly see the Patriots maybe grabbing an Irv Smith at 32? Do you see them trading out and getting him in the second or the third? I'm just trying to look at maybe some potential free agents that are currently still out there now. It seems like the tight end market is kind of closing up. I'm seeing Austin Seferian Jenkins, he's available. Jermaine Gresham is still available. Marquise Gray, not a huge name, but he's out there. Richard Rodgers, I know you know him personally from catching that Hail Mary pass against the Green Bay Packers. Just a couple of like minor names out there. Any of them maybe you think they take a run at, or is those just names that are just out there that wouldn't really fit?
Well, with the free agent class at tight end, you know, being weak now, all those names that you listed have one thing in common, and those are tight end twos for New England. None of them guys are going to be able to move the offense, and I think these last 9 years, I think one of the reasons why Brady was able to be Brady and be productive is because of Gronkowski. I mean, we seen it that he was the most reliable, you know, reliable guy. And I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why they never really cared about getting a wide receiver one, is because they had Gronkowski. I do think they end up signing one of those guys, Richard Rodgers, Jermaine Gresham, just because they can be tight end twos. They can, you know, catch some balls, but I think the replacement is going to come into the draft, through the draft, unless they pull a shocker and they trade, you know, maybe a Jack Doyle from the Colts. I mean, with Ebron there, you know, if they can lock up Ebron long-term, I think the Colts might, you know, they might go in, even though, you know, they've had history between them. If there's a good trade for Jack Doyle, they might go and get a Jack Doyle or somebody else on the trade market. But yeah, Irv Smith would probably be the realistic option at 32, or at least around there, if New England doesn't want to actually jump up to, say, 13 or 10 or whatever. But yeah, Josh Oliver from San Jose State, he's a one of my sleeper tight ends. They could probably get him in the middle rounds, who could potentially really, really do something. And Jay Sternberger, who is really making a name for himself through the, you know, from the combine and everything. I would maybe call that a sleeper pick at 32. I mean, he's making buzz of potentially being a second and third round guy, but we've seen New England also draft guys that aren't first round projected, and they end up taking him, and we see how it turns out. So Jay Sternberger from Texas A&M, he might be someone that the Patriots really dig deep into.
Yeah, they're not gonna find another Gronk, but they're definitely gonna find a replacement, and that's what I'm worried about. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Another name that is not on the market but could be traded for, that we haven't really talked about, maybe a Cameron Brate from Tampa. They got O.J. Howard there. Maybe they can try to swing a trade to bring him into New England. That would be a nice name there. But all in all, it's Gronk, as of right now, his career is over with. Obviously, he could come back. He's still just over 30 years old right now. As of right now, he's hanging up his cleats, and it remains to be seen what he does next. But good luck to you, Gronk. And before we go on to the next segment, we got just a couple more things to mention about Gronk. Adam, why don't you take it away?
I want to, in this episode, I want to make sure that Gronk got his dues, because even though he was a Patriot and a lot of people aren't huge fans of Patriots, he was a great player to watch. I mean, I just wanted to list off some of his accolades. He was tied with Tony Gonzalez and Jason Witten for the most 1,000-yard seasons by a tight end with 4. You know, he's a 5-time Pro Bowler, 2014 Comeback Player of the Year, 3-time Super Bowl champ. I'm a huge believer that he is a huge part of why Brady would still be able to be the GOAT, what some people call him. And then, you know, and there's stats to back it up. I mean, 23 catches in the Super Bowl, which is a tight end record. The most receiving yards in Super Bowl history by a tight end, with 297 combined yards in his Super Bowl appearances. He's the only tight end with 1,000 receiving yards in his postseason career. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, 12 postseason touchdown receptions, which is the most by a tight end. And he's the only tight end to ever lead the league in touchdowns. And he did that in 2011, and he has 17 of them. And you could technically say 18, because he had a rushing touchdown that year as well. And one of the biggest things is just how dominant he was when healthy is. He's the only tight end with 3 seasons of 1,000 yards and more, or more, with 10 touchdowns or more in the same season. So, you know, just Gronk, thank you for giving everybody, you know, some entertainment, you know, all the good things you have done. You know, we have heard stories about how good of a, you know, that he does give back to the community, that he's a good person, and he was fun to watch. I mean, no one can spike the ball like Gronk.
So Tony Romo, as we know, he is the CBS commentator. He is reportedly looking for $10 million in his next contract in the broadcast booth.
Yeah.
What do you? Yeah.
If that was the case, he should have just stayed and played football. I mean, back up Dak Prescott. You might be making that much.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know how these broadcasters, how much they're getting paid, who that highest paid broadcaster is right now. But $10 million does seem kind of steep to be calling plays instead of being down on the field.
Yeah, and honestly, though, Romo is – I don't know how Romo can do that in a press box, but couldn't help the Cowboys win a Super Bowl. I mean, I watch a game and listen to Tony Romo, and he's calling 90% of these plays before they even happen. And I'm like, how'd you throw all them interceptions? How are you not being this human cheat code when you were on the field with Dallas? I mean, you thought Dallas, you know, the way Romo sounds – he should have been Tom Brady. He should have had 6-7 Super Bowls. I mean, he's calling everything. But no, I don't think him or really anybody else should be getting paid $10 million for, you know, calling some football games. I mean, that's a steep price just for basically a commentator.
Definitely. Yeah, it's who knows? Whoever's paying them, that's sign me up for that job. And one last thing, actually, I know I said the last thing was the last thing, but I want one more thing to talk about. The Falcons and Julio Jones are reportedly close to paying Julio close to $20 million a year annually. Now, I'm sure when this news breaks, it'll be on the next podcast right after that. So we'll talk a lot about it then. But just as a prelim here, what do you think about what this does for other comparable wide receivers, and also just in general, because I mean, $20 million tied up in one receiver—that's quarterback money. What are your thoughts on that, real quick?
It's Julio Jones. I mean, we've seen this guy. If he's not finding the end zone, he's still putting up huge numbers, and he makes the offense click. I mean, he's the reason why Matt Ryan has his good years. He's going to be the reason why Kelvin Ridley, Austin Hooper, and whoever else they get in there is going to be successful because he's one of the, if not the top wide receiver in the game. I mean, I compare him to, DeAndre Hopkins, a little bit to A.J. Green when healthy. And, you know, granted, I don't think, you know, Green's still playing his career. He ain't going to get that now, but this is, I think, you know, Hopkins could probably get a contract like that. I think he will get a contract like that. But yeah, with the way these wide receivers play and as good as some of these guys are, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a couple more $20 million a year, you know, wide receivers, because as much as people want to say it's a, you know, quarterback driven league, you need a good receiver to throw to. You know, if you got guys that are dropping the ball and not being able to break, you know, break big gains and stuff, what are you doing then?
Right. Now, if you were a GM, are you paying Julio $20 million a year?
I would give him $20 million a year, but I would have some incentives just because he does seem to get banged up a little bit. I think he might be 30, or he's really, really quickly approaching 30.
He just turned 30.
Okay, yeah. So I would give it where he could earn $20 million within his contract per year. There just have to be some incentives in there. Games played, catches, you know, just because I, as a general manager, I'd want security for my offensive security blanket, because if I'm paying anybody, I'd even do this to a quarterback, anybody, if I'm paying you over $20 million a year, I need a guarantee that you're going to be playing 16 plus games. And I say plus because if I'm playing, you know, my superstar that I'm expecting to make playoffs at least a couple times within that contract, you know, I want my guys playing. I mean, if you're a quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, you know, we just talked about Gronk. Gronk could hit, I think, $20 million. I would want it, though, where you play 15, 16 games, you get your max contract.
Yeah, I agree. He's He is one of the elite receivers in the league, as you said, or as I said, he just turned 30. He's, I guess, the biggest argument is that he hasn't really gotten to the end zone a lot recently. I mean, at least from the fantasy football side of things, that's people's biggest complaint. But he gets the yardage, he gets the catches, and he takes the double teams. And especially in, I would put Atlanta up there with having one of the best trios in the league. There's a bunch of duos that are probably better than them. But as far as trios, having him, Sanu, and Calvin Ridley, you're now Julio alone opens up those other two. And that's, I mean, to pay. And he's still putting up numbers. Maybe he's not getting the touchdowns. Last year, he had a good year with 8 touchdowns. But maybe he's not getting into the end zone as often as you'd want him to. And that $20 million doesn't sound like it's good. But he has 3,000 yards just in the past 2 seasons. He's putting up the yardage, and he's taken away. He's drawing double teams to open up your other guys. And that right there alone is worth $20 million because you're running up and down the field, passing up and down the field with him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I would look at it from this point too. I know some fans, you know, that's a lot of money. I know some fans are like, oh, it's $20 million a year. No player, you know, outside of quarterbacks should get that. But if you look though, I mean, if Julio, like you said, 3,000 yards the last 2 years, that's great. That's insane. And you look at, okay, are they still scoring touchdowns? Yeah, Julio might have, you know, 8 last year, and I think he only had like a handful the year before. The thing is, though, are they still putting up 28 points a game? If they are, he's doing his job. Because to me, if your guy is getting all these yards and he's hitting double-digit touchdowns, you're telling me that if we isolate that one guy, you guys aren't doing nothing. So that just shows that if they're still putting up the points and Julio only has, you know, only has 8 touchdowns, that offense is built to succeed if Julio gets taken off the game.
Exactly. So let's take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about we had all of the admins throw a bold prediction our way, and we're going to break down each one and talk about each prediction. So we'll be right back.
Do you need advice for your fantasy football team? How about your DraftKings or FanDuel lineup? Going4Two.com has you covered. Going4Two.com has exclusive content from some of the best fantasy writers in the industry, whose credentials include Bleacher Report, Fantasy Pros, and Fantasy Life. From advice columns to player ranks, Going4Two.com has it all. Sign up for our newsletter to have all of our content sent to your inbox. Start winning today. Visit goingfortwo.com because no one remembers the extra point.
All right, guys, welcome back. Now we're going to get into some of our admins' bold predictions. Basically, in our group chat, we kind of asked just one bold prediction that you think is going to happen in regards to this year's draft coming up. Each of them gave us something. Now, a couple of these are going to be related, so we'll kind of lump those ones together. But just starting at the top, our admin Bronco, his is pretty easy. He says that TJ Hockenson is going to go top 10. Adam, do you agree, disagree, and what do you want to say about that?
Yeah, if any tight end goes top 10, I think it's going to be Hockenson. There's 3 potential suitors in their top 10. You know, Broncos team, you know, Denver. Originally Detroit, but now they're out. And I think Jacksonville, I mean, is a great spot. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like you said earlier, maybe the Patriots trade up there. But, yeah, it's a very good prediction. I mean, not super bold, but it's very likely.
I semi-agree. The defensive talent in this draft is so huge, though, that that's the only reason why I would think that he's pushed out of the top 10. I would agree with those teams that you mentioned, though. Not Detroit. They found theirs in Jesse James, but Denver would be one. I would throw Buffalo into that mix, even though there's other needs that we have. I would even say maybe not as high as 3. I would hope that they would trade back, but even the Jets would be one of those teams in the mix. I hope they're not taking TJ Hockenson at 3rd overall, but if they do trade back, maybe pick him in a trade back spot if they stay in the top 10. Other than that, those are and Jacksonville too. Those are probably the teams that I could see him going to. He's definitely going top 15, which isn't really much of a bold prediction, but it's there. Next prediction that we got is one of our main admins, Agent Joe. He says that the Bengals do not draft, that's his team too, the Bengals do not draft what they need, which is linebacker and O-line. Instead, they take one of the weapons, wide receiver or tight end. Currently, they're sitting at number 11. I've seen a bunch of mock drafts of them taking either Jawan Taylor, which is something that they need, Brian Burns, which is something that they need. But he's thinking that they go ahead and take either one of those tight ends or a wide receiver at that 11 spot, or even if they trade out. But that's his prediction. What do you think?
Yeah, if what you said comes true and it's the defensive talent pushes some of these offensive guys out, yeah, I see it. I mean, Hockenson at 11 would be great for him. In my 7-round mock that I'm doing, that'd be published probably about 3 or 4 days before the draft. I actually have them moving up with Jacksonville and taking Dwayne Haskins. So, I mean, I do think that's a strong possibility. I mean, ideally, I'd like them to pick, you know, Devin White if he were to drop, but the way that's looking, it's not going to happen. So if they go best player available, I mean, and Hockenson's there, I mean, I can definitely see it. Maybe even a DK Metcalf.
Yeah, I guess if best player available, very well could be one of those offensive weapons. I think that if they were to go one of their not needs per se, it would be quarterback. I haven't done a draft where I've kind of moved them up. So if they're staying at 11, maybe somebody like a Drew Lock or a Daniel Jones. Other than that, I don't necessarily agree with Agent Joe's prediction. I think they do take a position of need, and it's either going to be one of those defensive ends, linebackers, or on the offensive line. Our next guy is going to be Irish. He is saying that the running back of the future of the Chiefs is not on the Chiefs roster right now. That's Carlos Hyde, Damian Williams. He's not saying that they'll draft one on day one. He's saying that they're going to find their future on day two of the draft. Do you think the Chiefs currently have their running back of the future on their team?
No, they don't. Damian Williams isn't a guy that's going to carry the rock for you 250 times. Hyde could potentially, but I don't think so. I mean, I think it was a very short, I think what he signed to a 1-year deal. He's had opportunities and he flashes, but he's never actually, no matter, like, he's had, I think, maybe a pair of 1,000-yard seasons, but he's never actually grabbed the bull by the horns, just take it. I'm going to go even bolder on top of Irish's prediction. I think they're going to, if they stay at 29, I think they're going to take Josh Jacobs from Alabama. But they're in the first round or two, they're definitely going to end up taking their running back of the future to pair with Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill.
Okay, so you think that they do take, so you agree with him that the running back isn't on the roster, but you don't think they wait till day two. You think they take him day one?
Yeah, I'm gonna say at 29, they're, you know, Josh Jacobs. I don't think anybody would complain if they picked him at 29. I mean, he's a borderline first round guy, and I mean, he looks like he's gonna be he's the top running back in this class.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'll agree with Irish though. There's a lot of day two running back talent that's out there. The other Alabama running back. We also have Devin Singletary. We got Benny Snell. So they can definitely wait to day two and pick a defensive player day one. But I also don't think that he's on the roster. Damian Williams is somewhat of a journeyman. And you also got Carlos Hyde, who is on that short deal. He's just in there to kind of just split carries with Harris or Williams. But I think that they're going to be grabbing their guy this year. I won't say that it's in round one like you, but that's definitely a good prediction by Irish.
Who even thought this was going to be a conversation, you know, last year?
Yeah, not at all. Now it's with Kareem, the whole Kareem Hunt stuff going down. Let me start that over. Yeah, not at all. With the whole Kareem Hunt stuff going down, it's crazy to even think that they're even in the market for a running back.
Yeah, they looked like they were set for the next 10 years.
With the next, we got two of our Eagles fans. They're not, the predictions aren't exactly related, so we'll say them separately. But Count Nuckula, he says that despite being an Eagles fan and despite the need, that no running backs will be drafted in the first round, including their 25th pick, potentially Josh Jacobs. He thinks that the first round is going to be running back free. Now, you already kind of touched on this, saying that you could see Kansas City taking a running back at their spot. Aside from that, do you see any other running backs going in the first round, or could you possibly see a scenario where no running backs go in the first at all?
I mean, I think there's a bigger chance one goes. I think only one running back does get picked in the first round. And it's perfect because we don't have that Zeke Elliott. We don't have that Saquon Barkley in this draft. But the back end of this first round is – there's quite a few teams that could use a second running back. I mean, you got the Steelers who could potentially take one to pair with James Conner. We've seen Conner wear down at the end of the season. Houston might be a sleeper, even though they do have bigger holes to fill. Oakland has two picks in the back of the first round at 24 and 27. Philadelphia, and then, you know, we have the Chiefs. So, I mean, there's five or six potential spots in from pick 20 to 32 that a running back can go. And I do think, you know, I have to disagree. I do think we see one.
Yeah, I think we see one too. I'd actually think that Josh Jacobs does go number 25 to Philly. That's not necessarily a bold prediction because I've seen it mocked a lot, and that's probably the best fit for him aside from Kansas City. So I would disagree with him and say that at least one running back goes in the first, maybe not more than one. Our other Eagles admin, Philly Special, he says that the Eagles generically just move up in the draft, trading away their first round pick, number 25, and Jordan Mills. He doesn't really give us a return. He doesn't give us where they're moving up to. So kind of generic prediction, but just saying that they move out of the 25 spot and trading away Mills. Do you think they move up at all?
I mean, I could see it. Just for some reason is this draft is filled with so many good defensive players. You know, we've said it numerous times. Everybody says it numerous times. There's going to be some first-round talent that gets out of the first round. And I could potentially see maybe them trading that 25 pick to a team, maybe Cincinnati or something that needs a quarterback, or at least a future quarterback. Maybe Washington moves back up and takes a Drew Lock, a Daniel Jones, a Will Grier. So, yeah, I mean, I think now that, you know, if you really think about it, I think there's about a 75% chance that could happen.
Yeah, if you listen to me regularly in any of my mocks that I do, I really don't do a lot of trading at all. So I really can't say much about this one. When I do my mock drafts, I typically just pick exactly at the picks and the teams are staying where they're at. So I really don't have an opinion on this one. Obviously, any team has the potential to move up, move down. All depends on what the other team is willing to give you and if there's a deal made. So I'm not going to touch this one, but definitely a good prediction by him. Another one that we got, Redneck, he's one of our newer admins. He's also a Denver fan. He's saying that Denver, who currently picks at 10, swaps pick with Tampa Bay, who picks at 5, and grabs Devin White, the linebacker. Obviously, Devin White is a top 8 to 10 talent. Do you think Denver moves up, switches with Tampa, and grabs him?
Denver would have to give up so much to talk Tampa Bay out of giving up that – not even giving up that pick, but giving up Devin White with Quan Alexander being gone and numerous reports saying they're in love with Devin White. I don't think any team can get that number 5 pick. I think if Oakland passes on White at 4, I think Tampa Bay turns in their card with Devin White's name on it within 30 seconds. I mean, he's a guy that you can put next to Levante David, and that defense is just going to automatically get better. Once David's still fairly young, but once he moves, I mean, that's going to be White's defense.
Yeah, just in general, I don't think Tampa moves out of 5, even if they don't take Devin White or Devin White's gone before the 5 pick. They just have a lot of needs, most of them being on defense, and with this with this draft being so defensive heavy, they really can't go wrong with anybody that they take there. So I'm going to disagree with Redneck and say that Tampa just stays at five. Is there a chance that Denver does get Devin White? Yeah, I mean, he can fall, but it's not going to be via number five with Tampa.
No.
Our next one, this one's crazy. S. Taylor 21, obviously he's a Redskins fan, but not Redskins related. He just generically says that the New York Jets are taking Kyler Murray at third overall. What are your thoughts on that?
If that happens, I'm probably going to give my next paycheck to him because that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. It just for some reason is the Cardinals might want to potentially set their franchise back by spending a top 10 pick back-to-back years on quarterback with this year being number one if they do end up trading Rosen and taking Kyler Murray. But the Jets aren't. The Jets, they're going to build around Sam Darnold. We've seen it. Le'Veon Bell, Crowder. There's no way that Darnold's going to move. Darnold's going to be there for the foreseeable future unless he puts up stinkers in the next 2-3 years.
Yeah, I have no idea where this prediction came from. And it's not a knock on Sean Taylor 21. He does know his football. I don't know why he said this. Maybe he just wanted to make the boldest prediction out of all of them, which he definitely did do that. I definitely don't see it happening, though. There's no way they're moving on from Sam Darnold. And if they do move on from Sam Darnold, it's not going to be this year. So there's no way they're taking Kyler Murray. It's going to be in a few years if he does put up some stinkers, like you said. I just don't see it happening. But, I mean, we asked them to give us a bold prediction, and that's exactly what we got. The next one is kind of related, but it's just to a different team. Diesel Draft, and he's one of our top draft guys, along with Bronco too. But Diesel Draft says that the Raiders actually draft Kyler Murray. Now, they do currently hold the number four spot. Obviously, we already mentioned Arizona at number one. So he says that there's possibly a trade-up. But even staying at number four, drafting Kyler Murray, do you see Kyler Murray in a Raiders uniform next year?
It wouldn't surprise me. I'm 50-50 on this. It wouldn't surprise me because it is the Raiders. You have you have Mike Mayock at the helm of everything, and he's a guy that got, I was 13 years old, I was 12 years old, watched the draft for the first time, and that next year I attempted to become a draft guru because of him. It's a move that I think Mayock would make if he's in love with the prospect, and we're talking about Murray. So if he's in love with Murray and if he persuades Gruden to do it, I could potentially see it. I mean, one reason why I would somewhat believe this prediction is because Cole does have some inside sources on some things. So I'm wondering if he's found out something that he's not sharing with me yet. But the only reason why my taking for no on it would be that they've got quite a bit of help for Derek Carr. So maybe they just think it's their past failures haven't been really Carr related. It's been more of the team around him. I mean, Amari Cooper was good for a while with him, but then he start, going down a little bit, but he's never had a Antonio Brown, Derek Carr. He's never had that guy to throw to. He hasn't had a player of Antonio Brown's caliber on his team at all, not at running back, not at wide receiver, not at tight end. So I don't know. I mean, are they building around Carr or are they building pieces for Murray? I mean, it's a good prediction. I mean, I don't think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be shocked if it did.
No, me neither. Aside from Irish's prediction of the running back with the Chiefs, I think this is probably the most realistic possibility, and we haven't gotten to ours yet, but I could definitely see Kyler Murray in a Raiders uniform, but at the same time, I don't think they're going to be giving up on Derek Carr just yet, so who knows? Part of me thinks that Murray is going to Arizona like a lot of the NFL experts do. Which would mean that the Raiders just don't have a chance at him because they picked number one. But it's definitely realistic, and I don't see a reason why it wouldn't happen, aside from they're fully committed into Derek Carr or that he's just not available. Our next one that we got is from Willpower, another Murray-related one. He says that the Giants trade number 17 that they received from Cleveland to the Cardinals for Rosen, and then the Cardinals select Kyler Murray. So that's basically putting a first-round price tag on Josh Rosen. The Cardinals selecting who everybody thinks that they're going to select at number one, and the Giants essentially getting their quarterback of the future, kind of all into one bold prediction. What do you think?
I mean, I love it to the sense where Arizona gets a first round pick back, because even though they won't, I mean, I think the best, the more than likely it's going to be a third round pick they get. The best they're going to get is a second round pick. But if I was Arizona, I would try to persuade teams into giving me a first round pick for Rosen, because Rosen's a 22-year-old quarterback who has 1 year in the Professional Football League, in the National Football League. He could turn into the next Drew Brees, you know, Philip Rivers. We don't know. No one knows. He's only had 1 year. So if I always thought, as soon as I heard that they were potentially moving him, I was saying, look, they need to get that first round draft pick back. You know, basically throwing away a first round draft pick a year later, which technically they're doing, is it shouldn't make any fan base happy. But I could also see, you know, if any team did go up for Murray, it could be the Giants, just because, you know, we've been hearing stuff about the Giants aren't really in love with Haskins, which I'm going along with it for now, but I think it's a bunch of smoke screen. But yeah, I mean, it would make sense. I mean, I would be I actually like I the only reason why I even like this prediction is because Arizona's getting what I think what they should in return.
Yeah, this is another one of those most realistic predictions. The thing that kind of turns it away is that first round price tag on Rosen, but it definitely helps them out now with the Giants receiving that number 17 pick from Cleveland. It makes it more realistic, because there was no way that you're giving up number six for him. You're better off just taking Haskins if you only had that one number six pick, and now you have six and 17. 17 can be given for Rosen. There's only a handful, even less than that. There's less than a handful of teams that I can see potentially trading a first or even second round pick for Josh Rosen. The Giants are one of them. One of the Oakland late round picks could be another one. And just off the top of my head, I mean, maybe Miami, but they pick a little bit too early. Maybe they could trade back and then end up giving that traded back pick to Arizona. But I like this prediction a lot. And it's definitely something that I would not be surprised on draft day to see it happen.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, too, it's like we're getting to the point. If you're looking at teams, I mean, there's not. We're starting to get to the point where a lot of teams don't need quarterbacks. I mean, we have potentially up to like three or four, maybe five first round picks next year at quarterback, and it seems like teams aren't really in the dire need of it now. I mean, there's a handful that could potentially find their quarterbacks this year, and then who knows? I mean, it just gets to the point where like not every team has like a glaring need at quarterback.
No, not at all. And even Miami, and actually our next bold prediction mentions Miami. I think they're in a position, and yeah, they went out and got Fitzpatrick, but I think they're in a position to grab a guy next year. And we keep on saying that. I think we've mentioned it on about two or three other of our pods so far, but I don't see them. I don't see them being one of the teams in the running for Josh Rosen. But we'll move on to Pack Rat's prediction and kind of touch on that. He says that Miami trades up ahead of the Giants and drafts Haskins. So he's moving into the top five, or maybe even swapping with the Giants, who knows? But he says that they're basically sweeping Haskins away from the Giants.
If they were to get Haskins, which I think it's going to be quarterback in 2020, they would have to jump the Giants. I mean, we like you said a little bit ago, we have heard a bunch about they're not in love with Haskins. I think it's smokescreen. If Haskins is there at six, I do think they take him if they feel that Locke and Daniel Jones can't work with them. I mean, if they look at them and go, well, no, we don't think these are the type of guys that can learn from Eli, I think they do go Haskins. But if they take Haskins or not, I don't see Miami doing that. I think there's too many other holes Miami has for them to take a quarterback this year, because before they even think about a young potential franchise piece, they need to build around that quarterback that's not there yet.
Yeah, and for them to move up, currently they're sitting at 13. For them to move up, they would probably have to jump into like the 7 to 9 range and then move ahead. So I could definitely see a team like San Fran, like the Jets, even like Oakland at 4 moving out, but they're not just going to jump from 2, 3, and 4 to 13. They'd probably want to get into still stay in the top 10. So you're looking at them trading with the Jaguars, the Lions or the Bills, and then taking that pick that they move up to get there to jump ahead of the Giants. So it's a lot of movement. We did see it last year, kind of going back into even before the draft, where the Bills started with 22, or they started with not even 22 yet, but they ended up getting 22 from the Bengals, and then they ended up going to 17 from Tampa, and then they ended up getting into the top 10 for Josh Allen. And so, like, you're making, it's not as big of a jump, but you are still making a semi big jump, especially getting into the top 5. So the moves that the Bills made last year is kind of similar to it, because they didn't get into the top 5. Miami needs to get into the top 5 to get ahead of the Giants. So I don't see, I'm just going to say, as far as the bold prediction goes, I don't agree with it, because they did go out and get Fitz, and I think they get their guy next year. But it is quite a bit of moving around just to make it happen.
Yeah, and the last thing they want to do is come out of the end of the draft giving up more picks than what they have to. I mean, no matter what, I mean, to go from say 7, even 7 to like say 3 or 4, that's still gonna be a nice price tag. And with there being so many holes in your roster, you're not gonna be able to build. This year would be basically you get your quarterback and that's it.
Yeah, you'd probably have to give up next year's first just to move up to that, and it's for them, it's not worth it. So now we're on to our last two predictions. It's mine and yours. We'll start with mine, and I said that the Giants do not take Haskins at 6. They instead take their quarterback at 17. Obviously, that's not going to be Haskins. He's probably going to be gone by then. So we're kind of looking into the Drew Lock, Daniel Jones range. 17, that's their new pick that they got from the Browns in the Odell Beckham trade. And I think that they either go one of the wide receiver weapons, like a DK Metcalf, or they just go with the best defensive player available and still get their quarterback at 17. It's now, to me, will that really happen? I don't think so. That's just for this segment, it's a bold prediction. I think that they do end up ultimately taking Haskins at 6, but for the sake of argument, it's something that could happen. I mean, there is still some good quarterback talent after Haskins. It's not a huge drop off between Haskins to Jones and to Locke, but let's get your thoughts on it, actually. What do you think about my prediction?
Honestly, I think your prediction is probably the most realistic that we've heard. I mean, the way the team's in front of the Giants at 17, they could wind up with, Murray going one. They could wind up with Haskins going to a team that trades up for number 2 or number 3, maybe Washington at 15, and they could wind up with either Drew Lock or Daniel Jones at 17. I mean, I think it's very realistic that they stay there. I think that'd be ideal. I mean, we've seen them trade away Odell, Olivier Vernon. They lost Landon Collins. They have quite a few holes now to fill on both sides of the ball. Now they got big needs to fill on defense. I mean, they could go and draft, stay at 6 and get a Montez Sweat, a Brian Burns, and even an Ed Oliver to to kind of replace Damian Harris, who got shipped over to Detroit. And I think they could go land their quarterback of the future at 17. And they pick early in round two, you know. So that's an option as well. I mean, honestly, that would be, I think, you know, get you a top defensive player and you can get your potential quarterback of the future at 17. Because I really do believe that Daniel Jones or Drew Lock will be there at number 17.
So let's feed off of that. Now, do you think that obviously if Haskins just isn't there at six because somebody else moves up, they can't take him. Do you think they stay at 17 or do you think they try to move up a little bit higher, maybe into like the, because they're going to have to jump Washington and Miami if Haskins is gone. Do you think it's more realistic that they just completely pass on Haskins at six and maybe he just lands at Jacksonville at seven? Or do you think that they don't grab, or do you think that they grab a quarterback with their second first round pick because Haskins is gone?
I mean, if Haskins is off the board, I mean, I think they stay there and they take the best defensive player available. And if Haskins is there, I mean, we've been hearing it that they don't like him. I mean, I think they would pass. They'd pass, grab that defensive player, and you know, and we don't know how their draft board set up yet. They might, you know, view it where Haskins isn't the type of person for them. He might not, to the Giants organization, he might not fit their system. So, I mean, I think there's a good chance they could just pass altogether. You know, stay there, draft the best player available at six, let Haskins go to seven, or maybe eight, who knows. And I think they would take their chance because I honestly think the way they're basically selling, you know, Odell, Harrison, you know, players I mentioned earlier, maybe they don't even touch a quarterback this draft. Maybe they're a team that they're not going to be like Miami. Oh, we're not taking a quarterback this year. We're gonna wait to 2020. Maybe they're gonna wait to 2020, and they're just not bragging about it.
That would shock the world. That would definitely shock me. I think that they'd take a quarterback somewhere, but that would now that I think about it, I could definitely see that happening. Well,
people thought the same thing last year. You know, people thought that Eli would. You know, he put up that sinker last year, and people were like, oh, it has to be Baker, Darnold, you know, Allen, Rosen. They pick Saquon Barkley, the best player available.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That's I mean, and who knows with this GM, he's been doing some crazy things. I know people in the New York metropolitan area and just Giants fans in general just want him out of there. So we'll see what happens. The draft is a little less than a month away. Or it's about a month away actually. And let's get into your prediction, sticking with the quarterback theme. I'll let you even mention it and then talk about it.
I think only three quarterbacks go in the first round. I think, you know, we've seen last year we had five. You know, the last couple of years we've had, you know, four, mostly three. But I think there's only three. I mean, Murray and Haskins are locks. And, you know, they're locks to go probably top six, I would think. Top seven at the latest, but you know, I see only maybe it's a toss up between Locke and Daniel Jones going to be in the third quarterback taken. Just for a simple reason is there's not a lot of teams that absolutely need a quarterback right now. I mean, you go and you look at Washington with the whole situation they had with Alex Smith. Do they ride with Case Keenum this year and just wait until next year to draft a quarterback? Because they can cut Keenum after this year and, you know, not be on for any money because that's, you know, his contract's basically still with Denver. All the guarantees are with Denver. So they could just use Keenum this year, cut him next year, and have that rookie come in with Alex Smith, who's hopefully going to be healthy but still older, and do that. I mean, Miami said they're waiting until next year. And then you look, and it's like, who really needs a quarterback? I mean – the Giants, if they take one at 17, that'd probably be the three right there. Because after them, Minnesota, Tennessee, Steelers, Seahawks, Ravens, Texans, like playoff teams, you know, or borderline playoff teams that aren't lacking the quarterback. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Daniel Jones or Drew Lock could end up sliding to round two.
I dig it. I don't agree, but I dig it. I think that it's going to be the four quarterbacks that are taken in round one. And not only that, I think they're going to be taken within the first 20 picks. I'll feed off your prediction and kind of put a pick limit on it, say the first 20. Now, one thing that we do got to remember, and there's not really any quarterbacks that kind of hover around like the 30 to 45 rated range of overall players. But we got to remember that there is that fifth year option on first round picks. So having somebody, and quarterback is obviously your highest paid position. So if these guys pan out, come their first contract, they're going to be getting paid some Uber bucks. So having Washington or Miami or Cincinnati taking their quarterback because he's on the board, making it those four guys, makes quite a bit of sense, because they get them for essentially 5 years. And I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons why I think Baltimore traded back into the first round last year to get Lamar Jackson. Now, he was around that rated rank to move back into the first round, but they'd have that fifth year option on him now because they grabbed him in the first round. Again, I don't think any of them are falling past 20, because really after the Giants at 17, there's really not many teams that need a quarterback. I mean, Pittsburgh's looking for the future. The Saints don't have a first round pick, but they're going to be looking for the future eventually. But I can see Haskins, Murray, Locke, and Jones all going in the first round.
Well, and going back to your thing about the buzz about the 32 to 45 pick range, there's been some buzz since the West Virginia Pro Day about Will Grier possibly hearing his name called on Thursday. I mean, some scouts are really, really loving him, and I guess some GMs came away from his pro day thinking pretty highly of him. So, I mean, I could be wrong altogether, and instead of saying only three would be taken, there could end up being five. I don't think it happens. I personally don't believe four will be taken, just because I think after you get past the Giants, unless somebody pulls a Packers back in, what, 07 or something, where they drafted Aaron Rodgers. I mean, maybe the Chargers, if they came away at, you know, Daniel Jones is there at, what, 28, maybe then. But, I mean, I don't know. It's again, like I said a little bit ago, it's getting to the point where not a lot of teams are needing quarterbacks right now. I mean, after you take away the top three, I mean, you know, does it really matter who the Giants get at quarterback this year? I mean, you trade away Odell Beckham. You aren't built, you know, defensively that well to limit the points that you're giving up. I mean, does it matter if you take a quarterback? All he's going to do is start out with a bad record anyways. I mean, the quarterback's not built to succeed over there right now. You know, before the whole Keenum thing, I mean, I was thinking maybe Washington, but who knows? I mean, Keenum, I don't think is a threat to Washington really taking a quarterback if they wanted to. But with this defensive draft being so good, and with Washington having a good defense, that might drop a good offensive player to Washington at 15. So it's more of me not thinking that these four quarterbacks are good enough to go in the first round, because I would take Drew Lock in the first round. I would take Daniel Jones in the first round. Everybody would take Haskins and Murray in the first round. It's more of, I think guys are going to slip, and I think if it would be a Daniel Jones or a Drew Lock more than it would be a AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, Marquise Brown, you know, a Noah Font. I think those guys are more likely to be picked than a quarterback that isn't necessarily a need for any of the top or the back 10 teams.
I definitely get your points. I think we're gonna disagree on this one, but that's good. We need to disagree on some things, and I think this is something to disagree on. That's the whole point of this segment, was for bold predictions. And you definitely hit us with a bold prediction. So that's definitely exactly what we were looking for. We're going to jump into another break here. When we come back, we got just a couple more things to talk about. We'll go through the three players, one player from each team that we specifically don't want the other teams in our own divisions drafting. For me, with Buffalo, I'll go over three players that I don't want: the Patriots, the Dolphins, and the Jets to draft. And Adam will go over three players that he doesn't want: the Vikings, the Bears, and the Packers to draft. So we'll talk about that when we get back. All right, guys, welcome back. Our final segment here, just something short. Just a couple players that, as fans of our teams, me being the Bills, Adam being the Lions, we're gonna go over a couple guys that we do not want to see our counterparts draft in this draft, mostly because of the effect and stuff like that that they're gonna have on their teams. Like, I'll just start it off and say, basically, I do not want Miami going after Dwayne Haskins. Now, as much as I want that rivalry between Buffalo and Miami to be there, I'd rather have them suck for as long as they can. We're long removed from the Kelly and Marino days where they were going back and forth at it. I do want to see Josh Allen battle it out with his other counterparts in the division. He's got Sam Darnold. Brady's going to be around for a couple more years. Miami, as of right now, does not have their guy of the future. As much fun as it would be for Miami to have Haskins and have them be competitive against us, I just don't want it. I mean, obviously, as a fan of my team, I want to have the upper edge in those games. So having them not have Haskins, who I think is going to be the best quarterback out of this draft, it just makes it better for Buffalo. So Dwayne Haskins is a no-go to Miami for me. Although if it does happen, it will be a little bit fun. Adam, who's the first that you want to talk about?
I'm going to go with Chicago. I don't want him drafting Yakut Sin, the corner from Temple, because he's going to be a ball hawk. He's going to cause trouble for whatever quarterback throws his way. And with Chicago needing a third corner, slot corner, I do think they could potentially take one in the first round. And I don't want to be Rakia Sin because he's going to mess with us for years.
It's a good one, especially having Matt Stafford chucking the ball up. You don't want that those secondaries getting better. My next guy, it's actually going to be a pair of guys, because either one of them, especially going into the system, can work out. It's going to be either of the Iowa tight ends to the Patriots. As we mentioned earlier, we don't think any of them are making it out of the top 15. But either the Patriots moving up or one of them dropping to number 32, I do not. I basically don't want to have Gronk 2.0 for the next 9, 10 years again. As mentioned earlier, we've been dealing with that for the past 9 years. He has owned us in more games than not. It seems like whenever he's playing Buffalo, whether it's home or away, he shows up to play. I don't want that again. I know Tom Brady's on his way out soon, but for the next couple of years, as long as he's in the division, he is going to make people around him better. And I know Hockenson and Fant are those they're those top tight end tier talents. I just don't want to. I don't want to deal with all that again. Our linebackers aren't fast enough. Our corners aren't strong enough to deal with those kind of players. I just don't want it again. Do you have any thoughts on that? And then who's your next guy?
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, I don't even want to see that, and I only have to worry about playing the Patriots once every like 3 years, but let them be as stripped down and as untalented as they can be, that way other teams have a chance for the next few years. But I'm gonna go with Minnesota, and I actually don't want them to draft these positions, and I don't want them to mess with the offensive line. With Detroit signing Trey Flowers, and one of our main things that we really want to get to this year is get to the quarterback more. Minnesota has an offensive line right now where we can take advantage of. They will, and if we do that, that'll give us 2 Ws. That give us 2 victories. I don't want them taking a Cody Ford, if somehow they trade up and take like a Jonah Williams or a Greg Little, Andrew Dillard. I want all those offensive linemen to not be there. Worry about that later on in the draft and to get a less talented potential stud. That way we can get in there easier. We can rock Cousins. We can stop Dalvin Cook and take two games from a division foe.
Yep, that's exactly my thoughts. My last guy is for the Jets. They're picking at number three. I do not want them to take Josh Allen. I know Josh Allen has been mocked in a lot of mocks to the Jets. He would be a perfect fit there, but with the moves that the Jets are making, they're legitimately becoming probably the second strongest team in that division. It's going to come down to Sam Darnold versus Josh Allen, the Bills' Josh Allen, and because their offense is looking a lot better. I if we're going to compete in the division, Buffalo needs their defense to kind of step up and be the top defense that they could be. With Josh Allen on the Jets, that kind of pushes the edge in the Jets' favor. They went out and got CJ Mosley. They went out and got Trumaine Johnson. They already have one of the best young safeties in Jamal Adams. So I do not want to see them get Josh Allen and make that defense even stronger than what it already is.
Yeah, and who that's Josh Allen. I think wherever he goes, he's gonna be disruptive. But I mean, it would be kind of funny to hear Josh Allen got sacked by Josh Allen.
Yeah.
But no, my last one is the Green Bay Packers, who are picking 12. I don't want them taking any of the Iowa tight ends. I'm gonna go basically and say what you said about the Patriots is Jimmy Graham is. I was scared once we signed Jimmy Graham, just for some reason is I know how good Jimmy Graham could be. I know the habit the Lions have of somehow forgetting to cover the tight end, and we get burned by good tight ends all the time. And if they take one of them Iowa tight ends, that's going to put misery on the Lions for quite a few years because as of now, we still don't have anybody that can cover them.
And those are all great predictions. Again, we have our the NFL draft is coming up in a little over a month right now, and well, actually just about a month. What's today's the 25th, going on the 26th, so it is about a month from now. Jets picking number three, Lions picking number eight, Bills picking number nine. We have. It's going to be a fun draft. I know last year I was really excited about the draft because I knew that we were getting our quarterback. This year I think I'm a little bit more excited. Now we're not in the market for a quarterback for the first time in like 20 years, but it definitely is something that with me learning more about the actual players this year, getting more in depth about it, that kind of spiked my interest a lot more. So I'm excited to see what happens just overall. And please, Jets, don't draft Josh Allen because I do not want to deal with that for the next 15 years.
Yeah, no, this I think the draft is good because the way like Buffalo is a lot closer to I think competing than what some non-Buffalo fans would think. With the Patriots losing Gronk, depending on how they replace him or if they really don't, that could open up a huge a hole for you guys to potentially take the division. Wild card that every win counts. And I'm the same way with trade. I'm like, now with this big free agency we had, this draft, if we hit some of these guys, I mean, Detroit can turn things around really quickly from being, mediocre or bad to potentially, being a legit dangerous team.
So that about does it for today's episode. We want to give a big shout out to Jeff Lambert and Going for Two. And one of our next couple episodes, we do have a full mock draft that we did. And Jeff was kind enough to be involved in that. So just keep a lookout for that. We have Willpower, Irish, myself, and Adam, along with Jeff. And we had some other filler guys come in. So we'll kind of break down those picks, including some late round sleepers that we took. Give a shout out to the Going for Two page. Help us out with sponsorship. I want to thank all the guys on our page, Fantasy Football Fraternity, for giving us their bull and allowing us to break them all down. And that's about it that I got. So thanks for listening.